And let's see if we're up on the site. Right. And yeah, damn. Right up there. Awesome. And steady as she goes, as they say. Steady as she goes. How about that? All right. So we're just waiting on Dave. And there we go. All right. I'm like so far behind on emails. It's not even funny. Right? I mean, it's just so. A buddy of mine shows me his new book, and it's called 99 Ways to Improve Your Life. I said, nice. I said, get off the internet, one of them. He said, no. Oh, too bad. Too bad. Hello, Shtermovich. We missed you last week. Hello, Hank. Hey, girls. Michael. Michael, we've been having a whole hell of a lot of fun on FTJ lately, huh? We got to stop having this much fun. It shouldn't be allowed. Shouldn't be allowed. Should not be allowed. Right? Right, right, right. But I'm catching up. I'm catching up. Catching up with the emails, right? Yeah. Okay. We'll get there. All right, we're filling up here. Jimmy. Robert. Yeah, I don't use light at night except coming out of the computer. Yeah, I saw that, Michael. That was good. Yeah. Yep. All right. My buddy Lucas Gage has dropped out of the movement, he just told me. Of course we notice that you weren't here, Stramovich. I missed you. We've been having some fun lately. Yeah. I'll be seeing him this summer. Okay. Tommy, you always want Dukester to be cranky. I can get him cranky. Play a link in the chat. Dave, what do you mean, Michael? Play what? Yeah, it's Lucas with a C, Stramovich. Yes, he's out of the movement. He just says I'm out. That's all. Usury combustion. I taught Lucas how to do books, so now he's going nuts with them. Yeah, I guess you guys all see that Lerman show? Who didn't see the Lerman show? If you didn't, then you should. Steven, you should see it. Hello, Steven. He got swatted too many times. Dave, you're right about life expectancy in this movement. You need to do your pie chart and time line because he had crazy, huh? Yeah. He's a good guy. He's a friend of mine, but he gets a little too hot under the collar. And he knows that. I got a lot of good friends in this movement. I'm lucky. Family. Thank you, Stephen. Yeah, Lerman, who was one of the hosts here at FDJ, on Thursday night, I fortunately stumbled upon his scheme, which was creating about 50 fake accounts to donate money to himself to force the nice lady who's been in this show several times to match that donation, because she offered to do a double dono night. Anyway, we caught him and we threw him off. Nice of you to show up, Dave.
What?
Nice of you to show up.
Ah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I just had a little difficulties today.
Yeah. Where's my book?
Which one?
I don't know. Anyway,
we'll worry about that later.
I'll take any book.
I got some chapters for you.
But you
Yeah, we'll be quiet about that.
I got to tease you. Come on, man.
Don't tease me about
that. Why not?
Because I don't want you to.
That's what friends do. They tease each other.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Do what you want. I don't care.
All right. You can take it. You got thick skin.
I can take it.
Maybe no you problem. Can't take it from me, but you can take it from other people.
Yeah. Well, I can take it from you.
All right. So what's the good news?
Well, we got the same old crap in Iran. I mean, Trump is totally insane.
Yes.
He's totally lost his mind. He's all over the map. I mean, it's really kind of crazy how crazy he is, actually. It's just, I mean, he says one thing one second, one thing the next. Oh, we got them all beat. We just destroyed the whole army. But if the Europeans don't come help us, and, you know, we're not going to ever help them and all that kind of stuff. But he's desperate, like, you know. But it's about time. I mean, we have to understand something, and it's hard to say this as an American, because I'm a patriotic American. I don't want Americans to die in a war. It's the last thing I want. But I know one thing. As the government of this country, it's far more the enemy of our people, our very existence, as well as our freedoms, than Iran is.
Yeah.
In fact, just about any other nation in the world except for Israel.
Right. But Dave, you know everybody's noticing that now.
Everybody is beginning to notice it, but they've got to understand something else too. And this is something important. Even I think Norman Finkelstein understands this, because he's adopted my term Jewish supremacism, like so many others.
Did he thank you?
He didn't thank me. In fact, he thought some guy in Israel did it, who was one of the attorneys with Bezalel, right, who was a physicist. And he says, whoever, you know, this guy, it was a brilliant term that this guy invented. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't this guy he talked about that invented the term. My book, Jewish Supremacism, was long, long, long before that, and even decades before that, in terms of the book that I wrote called My Awakening, and other things that I've published and so forth over the years. So, I mean, they try to take everything else from me. I mean, I can't have my biography on Amazon, which is the biggest bookseller in the world. You can buy Mein Kampf, but you can't buy mine. And I think that's a real compliment.
Yeah.
Because what they're saying is that my book is a lot more powerful and convincing than even Mein Kampf. And Mein Kampf's been a pretty impressive book in terms of affecting the world.
It's hard to read.
It is hard to read, but that's one reason why my book is, I think, more effective, because it's more practical for people. I mean, you can't really endure 100 or 200 pages of German foreign policy or whatever in terms of the Second World War and in the Bismarck period and this kind of thing. And also, I think there's a couple of errors in the book. I'm sorry. I wish it weren't so, but I think Hitler was completely wrong about the Slavs and this idea that somehow. But I don't think the Germans were going to do to the Slavs what the Jews did to the Palestinians.
And the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. Because the truth is, there's always been Germans living around, Slavic peoples, Hungarian peoples, and so forth. And they've been treating them decently. In fact, the German populations in most of those areas, except where they were riled up by the Jewish media or something, were always very positive toward the Germans, because the Germans were always people. Their word was their bond. They kept their word. They kept their agreements with you. They treated you decently in the street. They were good fellow Christians. They weren't all about cheating you or stealing from you. They weren't porn kings like the Jews are. They weren't drug kings like the Jews are. They weren't prostitution kings like the Jews have been. Right?
That's anti-Semitic, Dave. Yeah. That's anti-Semitic.
No, it's not anti-Semitic, because I don't even like the term anti-Semitic. It's a ridiculous term.
All right, that's anti.
It was actually invented.
Just don't like Jews.
It was invented by a Jew. That's right. I'm anti-Jewish.
That's right.
It's Jewishness that I don't
like. That's right. That's right.
And because Jewishness is Judaism, and it's not that all Jews are Jewish, have Jewishness to them, but a lot
almost,
of them
almost
do.
Almost all.
Nobody. You know, it's just amazing that you can say all day long what, like, for instance, they said the Hunter Biden laptop. Oh, that was Russian lies. That was Russian interference in the election. But the truth is, saying that it was Russian interference in the election, the Hunter Biden laptop, was really Jewish disinformation. Right? It was Jewish lies.
Right. And the Goyim fell for it.
They fell for it because they didn't know anything else than that, because they were even blocking the websites and they were blocking the access to the newspaper, for instance, that was publishing a lot about this, the New York Post and many other papers as well. And then they had this big long thing about all these diplomats and these people in the CIA and government and military and all that saying, oh, yes, it's... You know, the Hunter Biden laptop, that's Russian disinformation. That's Russian lies.
Soon it'll be Iranian disinformation.
It's always the
same. They're always going to have somebody to
pass
the blame on. Dave, let me open the show first. I was
sure. Waiting.
All righty then. This is the Dave and Duke call-in show number 62. That used to be my football number. So it's a lucky number for me. And you can call in from anywhere in the world, almost, except for the countries the Jews don't like. I mean, the Iranians and the Russians. Now, wait, they're not on the list. Shit. So it can't be them. And you'll find that at the top of ftjmedia.com. Click that call-in button. And I put the PIN number in the chat. That changes every show. The numbers stay the same for the most part.
I'll be right back.
Okay. PIN number 9136. 39, 54, 97, hike. And then the pound sign after the numbers. 91, 36, 39, 54, 97, pound. And, of course, our ongoing challenge. If anybody could let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than Jews, organized international Jewry, not all Jews, almost all, let us know and we'll quit the show. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do to get us off the air. Just give us that greater existential threat. And there's the pin in the chat if anybody wants to call. And what do we got here? All right. Yeah, I saw that Orban lost. Yeah, they said he was going to lose. I guess the fix was in. All right. Okay. Yes, Lerman got caught stealing. Right. That's the song that should have been played for the show by Jane's Addiction, Got Caught Stealing. That's right. Too late. All right. Cool. Thanks, Shameless. That's right. That's right. And what about this Tucker Carlson interview, 19 minutes long, Michael? Who did he interview? Laura Kusenberg? Who the hell is that? Is that a Jew or is that a German?
I turned off my phone, but I couldn't find it.
So. All right. You want me to call it?
Yeah,
I could. Yeah. Let me call Dave real quick. All righty then. Hold on. I'll call him. Dukester, okay.
I got it. You don't.
Oh, you got it? Okay. All right. All righty then.
Yeah.
So there it is. There it is. We're ready to go.
Yes,
we're ready to resume. Now, Michael put up the. You watch Carlson, right? Sometimes. Do you know about this interview he did with Laura Kunis Kunzberg? Have you ever heard of that person?
Not really.
Laura Kunzberg, Kunssberg. Laura Kunzberg is, it's a British journalist and BBC presenter.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably German. Mm-hmm. Anyway, do you know anything about her or no?
No, tell me about it.
I have no idea. Somebody put the link in the chat, I guess.
Well, they should.
But it's not Iran.
Huh?
It says Tucker Carlson splits with Trump over Iran. No shit.
That's no shit.
So America First, right?
Yeah.
That gained popularity with the America First Committee, right? Mm-hmm. But you, in the more modern era, you popularized it. Your platform was pure America First.
Absolutely pure.
Yep. And that's why they had to take you out.
Pure and pristine.
That's right. You can't have America First. Jimmy says, Dr. Duke, I joked with you a year or so ago about how you missed calling a book Jews Are the Problem. So this time, how about Judaism is the problem for your new book? And Jimmy gave you $10.
Oh, thanks for the recommendation. I think we're going to see what we're going to call it. I better not give out the title yet. We're still working on the title, but I've got some really good ideas.
I'll give you my title. I gave you mine.
I know your title.
Yeah, mine is, do you remember?
Yep.
What was it?
You tell me.
No, come on, man. You
remember. I'm not going to say it. I don't want to talk about the book. I don't want to derail the book in some ways.
You're not going to derail it.
Well, let me tell you something. I've got an opinion that it can be derailed. Because
by who?
It's going to be the book by the Jews. Because
if we're doing it,
the more we talk about it, and the more we talk about the stuff that's going to be in it, the more they would like to try to do something to prevent it from happening. You see what I'm saying? Just like, you know, it's the same thing with Charlie Kirk. I mean, you think about it. I really do believe that the safest policy for someone like a Candace Owens or a Tucker Carlson is to come out even stronger about the Jews, right?
Of course.
First. But then, and they're famous, right?
If you move to the left, can you go to the left about a foot?
Yeah. They even go more famous, you know. But by that way, if they did eliminate them, if they did take them out of the picture, take them out, then everybody would know it was that. There's no question Charlie Kirk was changing. I mean, he said himself, he thought he was afraid that they were going to kill him. And they did kill him. I'm absolutely certain in my mind that it was Netanyahu and the Israeli state who murdered him. That's where all the first thing you look in a murder case is motive. And there was huge motive because, and the quicker they killed him, the sooner they killed him, the better off they were. Because the more he brought Tucker Carlson on and Candace Owens and started talking about how Jews were orchestrating the destruction of European peoples, you know, how they were. In fact, Tucker Carlson said that. And the more that, and also Charlie Kirk said that, right? The more that they would say things like that, which were not that publicized, the more they could try to pretend that Charlie Kirk was as he was years before and so positive for Israel and Jews, you know, the more they could get away with it. In other words, and that's exactly what they did. Netanyahu was on television, you know, full bore about how, Charlie Kirk was my best friend and, you know, he loved Israel so much. He didn't love Israel. You should see the emails between these people. He said these Jews were like stereotypical Jews who were trying to shut him down. And but anyway,
he came out right away to deny it.
Huh?
He came out right away to deny it.
Oh yeah, I didn't kill him. We didn't kill him. We loved him. Yeah. He was our best friend. Well, they could not.
We just kill everybody else. John we didn't
Kirk
kill
had
him.
A lot of followers. For you know, he was supposedly America first, but he was a little Israel first, actually, at some point. But then he started going the other way. I mean, people don't even understand that Candace Owens has played some of his videos. He was very much against the Iran war. He went to the White House to oppose it. And if he wouldn't have been dead, he would have been at the White House again to oppose it, along with Tucker. Tucker was kind of blacked out from the White House, but he would have been there again. And I think he was becoming more radicalized against Israel and against these Zionists, because anybody that digs into this deep enough and has to deal with these people learn the truth quite readily. They find out the most racist, hateful, murderous, genocidal. And there's just no way for someone to truly express how murderous this Jewish elite is. I mean, there's been no force on earth that have done more mischief to humanity, more just death and destruction for humanity than the Jewish element. And none other, you know, I say this quite a bit. It's kind of very important, especially for Christians, though, but it doesn't make any difference. If you're a human rights activist, which I am, I believe in human rights. And by the way, what does human rights mean to me? Well, it means that every people has the right to be free. Every people has a right to preserve their own identity, their own heritage, their own traditions, their own values, with one caveat: as long as they don't hurt, oppose, destroy, make sick, exploit, enslave, and kill other peoples. Everybody's got a right to pursue their own destiny. It's a Declaration of Independence, actually. I'm like the most patriotic American ever. I love the Declaration of Independence. It says the right of every people to determine their own government and to have a government in their interest. Our Constitution, the preamble, it says for ourselves and our posterity. That doesn't mean that saying you're for yourself and your posterity is normal. What they opposed about Jews was not the fact that Jews were for their posterity, but because they actively, as a religion, were the most corrupt religion on earth, and it was all about using deceit, lies, murder, even genocide to seek a Jewish absolute tyranny over the entire world. And it all really became multiplied. It's kind of like a virus incubating, you know, that there's a virus sitting in your shed or in your pantry, right? And it's been there for years, but it's just kind of, it's in kind of a, you know, it's kind of in a coma. It's like, what's the word for it? It's incubating, so to speak. It's still there. Let's say it's botulism. You know, which is one of the kind of, and you can have very deadly versions of botulism. And botulism was a food poisoning, and it's just sitting there. And maybe it's in some grain that you have or something you've had for a while. And usually you can do anything you want to with grain, even something that's a couple of years old, a few years old. So anyway, it's sitting there, and it's just ready to just sprout out and kill once somebody ingests it. And what happened was that when the Jews were sitting there nursing this vicious hatred, this vile toxins of anti-European, anti-white, and anti-humanity, hate and tyranny, they were percolating this for years and years and years. And Jesus Christ himself warned against it, as you know. I mean, when Jesus Christ came to us or came to the world, what did he talk about? He talked about the corruption of Judaism. He talked about the evil that was going on with Judaism. He talked about how the Jews hated every other people, hated all their enemies. And the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic, if you want to use that word, of any books in the history of the world. I mean, again, I'll do that one quote and then we could take some calls. But if you're ready.
Well, just keep talking until the calls come in.
Okay. Well, let's just take that one really great quote from John 8:44. I know it by heart. He said, first of all, in the first few verses before 8:44, he says, if you are of my people, if you were of my father, if you loved my father and me, you love me. You listen to me. You believe me. But you're not of my father. This is the Pharisees. This is the scribes and Pharisees that were the bosses. They were the kingpins, the elite, you might say, of Judaism. Said, if you love me, if you are of my father, you love me, but you're not of my father. You're of your father, the devil. This was in the temple. This was in the Jerusalem temple, right, of Judaism. He also turned over the money changers' tables. That's the first time he goes in the temple. What does he do? He makes a bullwhip and he starts driving the Jews out of the temple, turning over the temple, making a big ruckus, you know. That's him. He said, look at you. You know, this is supposed to be a place for God, and you've turned it into a den of thieves. He talked about how Jews were even stealing the homes of widows, right? Yeah, how they're just totally corrupt. The New Testament condemns usury. The Old Testament does too. But the difference in the Old and New Testament, the Old Testament says usury is fine to be used against Gentiles. You could do that. And what is usury? I want to make it clear to people. That's not just interest. It's not like getting a credit card loan for 4 or 5% or something like that. Well, it's not 4 or 5% anymore, but anyway. But it's not like a credit card loan. It is called loan sharking. And back in those days, it's easy. And people often get desperate for money. They have bad crops, or they have a fire, or they have a storm or whatever that destroys them. They're trying to feed their family, and they're desperate for money to feed their family and take care of their wives and children. So and then this Jew comes along and says, oh, I'll loan you the money. You're my friend. I'm Shlomo. And don't go nowhere. I got money for you. You just have to sign this little contract. Oh, it's only about 36% interest compounded daily. You know, don't worry about it. You know, just pay me back in a couple of days. Well, anyway, so. And the Old Testament says it's fine to be usurious toward Gentiles. But Jesus came and said, that's not what I believe. I believe that God, my Father, and I are here for everybody, all mankind, that every people has a right to exist, to not be cheated, that you don't, you know, you have every right to be in favor of preserving your own values. For instance, I'll give an example there. Okay, so Jesus lived obviously in Judea, also lived, you know, in what was anyway a Jewish milieu. Who did he have really a lot of wrath for? Now, the Romans were occupying Judea at the time. They were running things. They conquered Judea. And they conquered what was called Israel, the entire Middle East. But Jesus' wrath wasn't against the Romans. In fact, the many times that he had any sort of contact with Romans, he had nothing but nice things to say about them. For instance, there was a famous story of the Roman centurion. And the centurion had a servant. And it was actually a man that was his son, because he had another servant girl, concubine, who had a child, apparently, and that was his son. And his son was really sick, thought he was going to die. And he saw Jesus preach, he saw Jesus heal. And he approached Jesus and he said, Jesus, I have a sick son and I believe in you. I believe that you have the power to heal my boy, my son, my servant. And he says, you know, and so he asked Jesus to heal his son. And Jesus says, sure, I'll heal him. I'll come to you. I'll come to him and heal him, you know. And the Roman centurion very smartly said, you know what? You don't even have to come to my house. Because, and the reason why is because if any person in the Jewish system, any Jew that would go to a Roman's house would be absolutely, you know, stoned. You didn't go into their houses. I mean, Jews were very exclusionist and very, very strict about that stuff. So the Roman centurion said, you don't have to come. I believe so much in you that I know you can heal my son from wherever you are. All you have to give the order. The same way if I told one of my lieutenants in the Roman guard, if I told one of my lieutenants to do an order or complete some task, I know I could count on them to do it. And I'm sure whatever you decide, whichever you order in this cosmos will come about. And so Jesus said, okay, fine. All right. So he then prayed for the man's son and to heal them, promised he'd heal him. And by the time the Roman got home, the son was healed. And interestingly enough, Jesus turned to his disciples, who were all people of the Judaistic faith, even though they were already learning a new faith called what today we call Christianity, or at least you could say the way of Christ, the teachings of Christ. And he said, he says, I never met a Judean yet that had faith like this man. So he praised the Romans, which all the Jews hated, right? They're conquerors, the tyrants that ruled over them. Well, the Romans just simply had the biggest kingdom and the biggest power in the world. And he said, if only, man, Judeans had faith like this Roman guy. Then there's another case in the New Testament where the disciples of Christ healed and converted, baptized, another Roman soldier. That's a no-no. Jews didn't do that. You didn't even get to be, you couldn't become a current convert at all unless you got circumcision. We've talked about this in this show a lot. Circumcision was a way of keeping Gentiles from becoming Jews. Because if you're an adult person and you have fully grown and developed reproductive organs and you're male, getting circumcised is no piece of change. It's no minor impact upon you. I mean, it's unbelievable. The pain, the danger, the infection, you can die from that so easily. If you get circumcised, it's like it puts you down for a week or two. At one point, the Jews tried to make a deal in Jacob's well. This is an Old Testament story. In Jacob's well, which Jesus visited, and he had a talking to this Samaritan woman. This is an interesting story too. And the people there, Shechems, the son of the guy who was the prince of the region, had an affair with Jacob's daughter. And this Jacob's sons really hated this guy, right? And but he was a decent guy. He said, look, I want to make an honest woman out of her. I want to marry her. In fact, you know, we love Jewish people. They said, we already know the Torah. We're really willing to be loyal followers of, you know, of the God of Torah and the Jewish people. And we'd like to share our wealth. We have a lot of power here and property and, you know, money and so forth. We'd love to share what we have with you and treat each other like brothers in the faith. And so the Jews, Jacob and his sons, they said, well, we'll think about it. So they come back to him the next day and they say, okay, we agree. Your son can marry my daughter. And that's no problem. And then we'll share everything and we'll live together in peace and harmony. It was all a lie, deceit. Kind of the same thing that Trump's doing with Iran and what the Jews do with Iran, right? All the time. So anyway, so they say, yeah, well, if you want to do this, y'all got to be circumcised, all your warriors, 1,500, 2,000 maybe warriors. And So they allow these Jewish mohels, and mohels are not doctors. They're Jews with knives, right? And so they allow these Jews to circumcise them. And circumcision is a pretty horrible event, right? Painful, dangerous. You're liable to get an infection and lose your money parts, lose your most precious parts for a man's position. And so anyway, they allowed it today. Now, in the old days, if you're an adult male and you're circumcised, the way it worked was that most people had to stay in bed for at least a week. That's how drained they were. They lose so much blood. They have so much pain and trauma in their body. They have to stay in bed for about a week. And the first couple of days, it's like you can't even move. I don't know if you can imagine half of your that organ that starts with a P on it, P-E, if half of that organ is removed in the most sensitive body parts that you have. And anyway, so when they were down and they all got circumcised, and are these 1,500, 2,000, whatever the number was. So they're in bed, hardly able to, in excruciating pain. They come, they sweep in there in the early morning, and they murder them all. They just butcher them all. They just come in with their swords, right, and just butcher them, house by house. I mean, and they thought these people were going to be their friends, but that's the way it works with Jews. But anyway, so that was an interesting story.
We ready for the questions?
Sure.
Let's go. All right, here we go. First question by Stremovich. Hmm. It ends in the word opinion. Recently, Vanessa Beale showed how the IDF has free rein in Syria as an example of how much further the Greater Israel Project has progressed. How much of Greater Israel has been achieved thus far, in your opinion?
Well, I think they control just about 2/3 of the world, because they control the United States, and through the United States, they control Europe. And in terms of Greater Israel and the more narrow aspect of the Nile to the Euphrates, that's a lot of it's been achieved. But right now, they've already, just listen to this now, they just recently expelled and forced out, ethnically cleansed, 1.25 million Lebanese. I know lots of Lebanese people here lived here in Louisiana. Some of them were my good political supporters when I ran for governor and senator. And they're good people. And by the way, most of the people here we had in this country were Christians. So it was natural for them to kind of come to America. But anyway, so they were good people. And I remember back, I've been following this, of course, since the 60s. And 70s, by the 70s, I really knew the score, right, with the Jewish issue. And I remember the incredible massacres of Christians in Lebanon. And, I mean, these were, the South Lebanon is almost all Christian. It still is mostly Christian. However, they do have some, obviously, some Shiites and some Sunni, but Shiites more than Sunni. But they have these Shiites, but they've got good relations with them. I've seen, people send me pictures, Christians send me pictures of placards in their windows, in their homes, right near their door, saying, quote, we, and then they have a heart, love Hezbollah. Because Hezbollah has said from the very beginning that they love Christians, they're Christians. They themselves have a lot of reference. Shiites especially, Shiites have great love for Christ. Well, most Muslims do. They say Christ is their greatest prophet, believe it or not. Now, that's a heck of a difference than Judaism, which says...
Right. So where do you think the Greater Israel Project is?
I think...
What they mean is...
They've made a lot
geographically.
Well, geographically, this is what I've been saying recently. This is going to shock you for a second here, but they're making really good progress on their Greater Israel process, because Greater Israel is not really about, you know, from the Nile to the Euphrates. Greater Israel, let's put it this way. Greater Israel is about making, you know, the three probably most amenable planets, even though they're not perfect to us, in our solar system that would be possible for colonization. It would not be Venus, but it certainly would be Mars. The truth is, the planet between Venus and the planet between Venus and Mars is Earth. So what is the boundaries of Greater Israel that they're trying for? How about planet Earth? Judaism is about completely putting the entire world under tyranny. And by the way, none other than David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, said exactly that. Exactly that. In fact, he wrote that the Look magazine was canvassing many of the leaders around the world. And they asked a whole number of leaders around the world, what is your prophecy? How do you think the world will be in the next few decades? Where do you think we're heading? And one of the people that they asked for his prophecy, his idea that where they thought the world would be in 3 or 4 decades, was none other than David Ben-Gurion. And Ben-Gurion answered, if I can give you a synopsis of this, he says, I believe that Israel, that there will, first of all, there will be a new United Nations, a truly United Nations. All armies will be abolished. Got that straight? Nope. You know, there'll be a global police force, and it will be headquartered in Israel. And in Israel, there'll be a truly United Nations form with a major building there. Well, there will be, listen to this, a Supreme Court for all mankind, right? And in Jerusalem, this is amazing, he says, the United Nations will build a shrine to the Jewish prophets, a shrine to the Jewish prophets, not a shrine to Christ, not a shrine to, you know, anything. No, it's a shrine to the Jewish prophets. Now, they all believe in Noahide laws, which basically prevent any sort of human conscious on religion, whether you're religious or not, whether you're Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or whatever you are, no religious freedom. And if you believe in Christianity or Jesus, that makes you an idolater, which by the Noahide laws makes you guilty of idolatry and makes you subject to capital punishment. You know what that capital punishment is by the Noahide laws, Dave?
Beheading.
Yes. You got it. You've heard the top words there. But yes, exactly right. And our Congress in the United States even did this bill, which is an education bill, which said how we're looking forward to those Noahide laws. And these are mostly Christians, and so-called Christians, right? Europeans, who say, well, it said the Noahide laws are part and parcel of the basic laws upon which, you know, civilization exists. All this crap, you know? Yeah, right. Where Christianity is punishable by beheading, that's really a good law, you know. So let's get all those senators and congressmen that supported this legislation, which was an education bill. Let's get all them. Let's let them be the first ones that are sacrificed.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next question. This ends in the word war.
Okay.
What do you think of Chicago-born Pope Leo XIV disagreeing with Hegseth that U.S. troops fighting for Jesus in Iran and denouncing the delusion of omnipotence that is fueling the U.S.-Israel war in Iran and demanded political leaders stop and negotiate peace? Enough of the idolatry of self and money, Leo said. Enough of the display of power. Enough of war.
I think that was a good statement. And it was the strongest statement I've heard from any pope in the last few years against Zionism. There were some quotes that were similar to that, but it's a great quote, and it's so true. I mean, Tucker Carlson's been right. Candace Owens has been right about this. I've been right about this for years because, I mean, the first one who had been opposed to what's happened in Gaza, if he were still walking around today rather than being in heaven, would be Jesus Christ. And because no one was more protective of children than Jesus Christ and the innocent, seemingly innocent people should never be slaughtered. And that's one of the issues that Christ had with Judaism. See, it's hard for people to get this in the United States because of the propaganda that Christ was very much against Judaism. And Christ stood against the basic pillars of Judaism. Look, if you noticed any, that we're Christians, right? Judaism demands you be circumcised. So if you have a little baby, you have to circumcise them. Now, some Americans are circumcised. That's true. But in Judaism, it is a must. And so if you have a conversion to Judaism, you must be circumcised, which is a huge barrier. Christianity doesn't have that law, doesn't have that barrier, right? Christianity says that, you know, certainly you should take care on Sabbath and give to God what's God's. But it also said, Jesus also said that the idea that someone would be given the death penalty for picking up twigs or sticks to put in their furnace or put in their oven, their stove, to heat their home for their sick child or sick, they need some heat, or you need to do some work to get some food together for your kids who are starving. That's ridiculous. And Jesus himself broke that law. People often say Jesus came to fulfill the law. He did come to fulfill the law. And that was the basic law that love is the chief parameter of the way we're supposed to live. It's the golden rule. And Jews didn't believe in the golden rule. They believed that they could use any sort of deceit, lie, cheating. That statement, we never even got to the end of it from John 8:44 before we got off the subject. But remember, that statement is, quote, you of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father, ye well do. He was a murderer from the beginning. Boy, ain't that the truth. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not. And the lust, if I murder from the dead, abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his very essence, because he's the father of lies. And that about sums it up. It's probably the most anti-Jewish statement ever made in history. You have your father, the devil. Lust of your father, he will do. Don't you think of Epstein? Jeffrey Epstein, first thing, the lust of your father ye will do. Don't you think of the headlines, for instance, in Great Britain and around the world and in Israel too, these headlines reading, Israel, promised land for pedophiles. They have the biggest gay meetings in the world in Tel Aviv. However, they try to keep Jews from being homosexuals because they want to reproduce and they get the highest birth rate. And they're not a friendly country to abortion, but I can show you how Jews consistently lead the abortion efforts in the United States of America. They don't have any problem with abortions for Palestinians or for, you know, Europeans. They just have a problem with abortion for Jews.
Well, and they don't have a problem with it. They want it done.
Right? Well, for us.
Yeah, that's right.
Next question. Like everything else, it's the biggest hypocrisy in the whole world.
That's right. Next question.
Yeah.
It ends in the word pandemic from Lisa from Germany. Who is the worst threat to the world, the U.S. or Israel? A majority of Americans keep serving, feeding, empowering the beast that keeps strangling them, and they tear down the whole world with them. If the Trump insanity, U.S. warships now blockading the Strait of Hormuz, is not stopped, U.S. Rahel is going to bring the world to a standstill, much worse than they did with the phony COVID pandemic. So who's the worst threat to the world, the U.S. or Israel?
Well, it's neither. The worst threat to the world are Jews. Okay? And we have to understand something. To talk about the U.S. being a threat or Israel being a threat, neither of those societies would be a threat to us in real terms, right? In terms of the world as well, except for the fact for Jewish rule over us. Jewish supremacy is what makes America a threat to not only our own people, but to the people of the Middle East, whether it be Iranians or whether it be Palestinians or whether it be people from any of these countries, Lebanese, Iraqis. It's just unbelievable the stuff that they've done. And they've also been the greatest orchestrators of mass murder of our people, because the greatest Holocaust in all of history was the Second World War. And Jews, overwhelmingly, they were the absolute orchestrators, creators of that war. It was a war that should have never been fought. And it was a war, basically, if you really want to look at the actual facts on the ground, if anybody had right on their side or justice on their side, the Germans said that on their side. Because from 1919, the German nation and the lands, a city such as Danzig, was taken away from Germany. They weren't allowed to be united with their own home country. Silesia, much of it was taken away. The Polish corridor was taken away. And then later, by the way, in the Second World War, East Germany, and you know, we're talking about Prussia and East Germany, all that area was totally ethnically cleansed. How many people, you know, we talk about 1.25 million ethnically cleansed in Lebanon, and we talk about maybe 2.4 million in Gaza. How many Germans were ethnically cleansed in what was Königsberg and the East Prussia? It was 13 million. How many girls between the ages of 8 and 80, literally, and I hate to use this word, it's a rough word, but if you have any kids, you can cover their ears. You know, girls from 8 to 80 were overwhelmingly raped. In Berlin alone, 100,000 women were brutally raped, gang raped even, by the Bolsheviks, which were led by these Jewish hate mongers such as Ilya Ehrenberg. So the greatest Holocaust in the history of the world was really Holocaust such as the takeover of the Soviet Union, or takeover of Russia, which turned it into the Soviet Union, by the Jews. The Holodomor, which was done by a number of people. It was Ozar Kaganovich, who was the director of that, who was actually a Ukrainian Jew. He was head of the Communist Party in Ukraine in the 1930s, which, you know, and, the 20s. And then he led the entire Holodomor from Russia, which killed 7 to 11 million. Now, is this something that just David Duke is saying? No, it's something the United Nations said, because in 2003, there was an international conference. The only thing that made me miss that conference, I was going to it. I planned on going to it. In fact, I had a half a billion. I had over 500,000 audiences, total audiences in the world set up after I did Al Jazeera in 2002 before the Iraq War. I had 42 million listeners in that. And the whole world wanted to interview me because I was the best known opponent of the Iraq War, saying it was a war based on lies, that there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was all a lie by Jews. It was a war to sacrifice American blood, American money, by the boatload, all against their enemy, Iraq. And they destroyed hundreds of thousands of families, marriages by this long separation. And they cost America $8 trillion dollars, probably more than that. And over the years, it's probably responsible for half of the national budget, because all we've been doing with the national budget over these years is not paying it down. It's just been growing. We've just been borrowing money against it. So when you think about all the interest since 2003, the costs of this war, which are totally amazing. So, but the Second World War was something that Jews wanted, not because Germany was trying to conquer the world. They weren't. You know who was trying to conquer the world, folks? Jews. And they have been conquering the world. And the reason why they had a Second World War, because they had conquered a lot of the media in America. And they conquered and inserted themselves and infiltrated our own government. They controlled the Woodrow Wilson administration in the First World War. They certainly were the biggest fundraiser in the Second World War for the Democratic Party, Roosevelt. You know, so you can just look at the biggest financiers of Wall Street, which supported Roosevelt's presidency. And they got us into the war with hook or crook. They got us into the war through the back door. What they did was we tried to, and again, I've told people the story when I was a kid in the 1960s, late 60s, there was a guy working as a diver who served in the Second World War as a Navy shipman. And also he served on some Navy ships in the Atlantic. And he said that they were under orders, and I believe him 100%. He showed me the evidence. He said they were under orders to fire volleys over the bows of German small cruisers. And they said that even if you hit them, don't worry about it, even though they knew, because these ships that they were doing were small frigates, and the German cruisers would have just destroyed them. But that's okay, because the Roosevelt administration wanted an excuse to get into the war. What's better than to say, oh, the German ships, you know, sank an American ship? But the Germans wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't submit to it, because they knew that they didn't want to get in this war with America. So what they did was they told the Japanese that we're going to cut off your shipping. Now, Japan is an island, and Japan is a very cold climate. It's up in the very northern hemisphere, almost Arctic, and they don't have hardly any oil. They don't have hardly any natural gas. They don't have these resources that we do. They don't have a good growing season. So if they don't import food enough, they can't eat. If they don't import oil and gas, they can't have any industry or business. So we threatened Japan that we're going to blockade your countries. We're in a war with them, by the way, but we're going to blockade your countries so you can't even get shipments of food or oil or whatever in your country. So basically, they told the Japanese, look, we're not going to let you do this. We're going to blockade you. So the Japanese then became totally desperate, said, you know, we don't have much chance. America is a much more powerful country than we are. They got a much bigger Navy, much more powerful Navy than we do, much bigger Air Force, a much bigger aspect. They're much richer than we are. But if we don't strike first, then we don't have a chance to survive, because they knew that America was out to destroy them. And we did. And we dropped two atomic bombs on them, which is quite remarkable when you think of that. I mean, who is the terrorist country? I say that, and my father had a different opinion than I did, but later he changed his mind, I think. And I asked him about Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And he said, well, this is what they told him. Of course, he was in the Army at the time. He was in artillery and air defense. And he said that, well, they said that they had about 50,000 dead in Okinawa, so some of the campaigns there, and they figured if they had to take over the mainland, there might be hundreds of thousands of Americans. But on that basis, they said, well, okay, we'll bomb these two cities, then we can get peace. Well, how about trying to bomb an island first, and you can see the whole island go up in smoke with the biggest bomb you've ever. People couldn't even imagine a bomb that big. There was no need for them to bomb. In fact, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were two of the most Christian cities of Japan, believe it or not. They're more Christians than probably anywhere else. And they just devastated it. It was horror. They didn't have to do that. But they wanted to do that for a few reasons. One is that Germany was already fundamentally defeated. But now they wanted to challenge and say, look, we're the biggest guys in the block now. No one can stand with us, because if you were the only one with an atomic bomb, then we rule. It's the same principle that Israel was doing in pursuing atomic bombs. If any country that is not pursuing getting an atomic bomb, smaller countries are fools. They're foolish, because the only thing that keeps North Korea safe is their atomic bombs. Period. Now, they haven't dropped on any on us, and even the North Koreans are not as ludicrous as we are. Even the Iranians are not as ludicrous. The people have more likelihood of dropping an atomic bomb or Israel, of course. If they even talk about a Samsung option, was exposed by a Jewish writer, Seymour Hersh. And we have this Jewish authority, he's an academic, named Klevold. And Klevold talked about the fact that if the one reason they have atomic bombs is because he says if Israel is going down and it looks like we're going to be destroyed, we're going to demand that America and Europe give everything we want. Otherwise, we're going to take you down with us. We're going to take down Rome. Even though you know no part in these wars that we did, we're going to take down Rome. We're going to take down London. We're going to take down Paris. We're going to take down New York. You know, we're going to take down all these countries, and we have enough bombs to do it. So that's called the Samson option, based on the idea of the biblical story, you know, how Samson brought down the temple or brought down one of these buildings that killed himself and a lot of Jews in the process when he was trying to bring down his enemies and the enemies of Judah. And that's a scary story, but that's one thing. I think if whatever was a situation that it looked like Israel was going to be overrun, I guarantee you they would drop atomic bombs all over the place. I mean, definitely in Iran. And if we didn't like it, they'd nuke us.
Yep. Can't argue with that, my friend. Not at all.
Okay. Are you done the hours? Let's get going. Okay, what's about the second hour, folks?
You want more questions?
Sure.
All right.
There's another thing I could do. I mean, if you wanted to do a different kind of a show, I could kind of point out how we can use AI, right, to help us doing research and to document the realities of the things we talk about. And it's very easy to do it. But the question is, to do this, you have to first present yourself academically, right? You can't just go on as Joe Blow, right, and say, I want you to tell me about the Torah, and I want you to tell me about the Talmud, right? And I want you to tell me about how the Jewish necromancer. Necromancer means a person that rises someone from the dead. He's a sorcerer that rises people from the dead so they'll do evil for them. It's like a zombie to go out and kill your enemies or whatever. Because Jews claim in their holy book that a necromancer, which is sorcery, by the way, sorceress rose Christ from the dead so they could boil him in excrement. Human excrement for eternity, torture them for eternity, because they hated Jesus Christ so much. I'll tell you something else too. It's so interesting, because so the story is that Onkelos was a necromancer, and they rose Christ from the dead And then they interrogated Christ, tortured him and interrogated him. And they said to Jesus, they said, now, you know, are you sorry for the fact that you betrayed the Jewish people? And they had Jesus, they made it all up, of course, it's all lies. Yes, yes. And of course, Jews say in the Talmud, and then this is really amazing, but it's hard to believe it, but it's true. In the Talmud, they actually claim that they crucified Christ, not the Romans. They say that they crucified Christ, giving him four deaths. Now imagine this. They do that because they hated Christ so much, they don't want to give the Romans any credit. They don't want, even though that the Jews, they can say, obviously, encouraged Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate says, I see no fault in this man. It's a Jewish holiday. I have to give you people the rights, my subjects, the Roman subjects. Well, but I'm the Roman Pilate. I'm the Roman person that's having to deal with you Jews. But you can free somebody by your national holiday, which is today. And but I see no fault in this man, right? And so the Jews said, crucify him, crucify him. Let the robber go, but crucify Christ. So according to, not only do they say that this didn't happen, that actually he was sentenced by the Sanhedrin to four deaths. It also says that they gave him 4 months to have anybody who could defend him, but he couldn't find anybody to defend him. And then they went ahead and did the penalty by giving him four different deaths, hanging, stoning. It's all the same.
Dave, we got a question.
Well, I want to finish this.
How long?
Not long, a minute or two. Okay. But anyway, so this is crazy, right? Now, these are the same Jews that say that Jesus was a sorcerer himself. They're always saying that. He's a magician. He's a sorcerer. Yet in the Talmud itself, it says that a Jewish sorcerer, and the Jews raised Christ from the death so they could torture him by burning him in excrement. Now, I've got to say something which will shock some of the listeners right now, and that is there was a little bit of disagreement with some of the Jewish sages. Some of the Jewish sages, there was no pushback, though, against doing this to Jesus, torturing him in human excrement, burning him or something. But a lot of Jewish sages came back and said, a number of them came back and said, no, we disagree. We don't think that happened. We believe that Jesus wasn't being boiled in human excrement. He was being boiled in human semen. That was the argument. You can't make it up. So they actually take credit for the killing of Jesus, even though to the public, even though the Talmud says that, they always talk about how the Romans did this. You got to blame the Romans. Well, I guess some blame can be going to the Romans, but the Romans didn't do this with a vile, evil intent. The Romans simply were trying to deal with people that they were ruling over, where they accede to some of their own wishes and their own cultures and things. But Pontius Pilate said, I see no fault with this man. In fact, Pontius Pilate said, it's your choice. You're going to make the decision whether he's crucified or not. And the Jews made the decision. His blood be on us and our children.
All right, here's the question.
Yeah.
From Stromovich, it ends in the word names. You just mentioned Norman Finkelstein. Rush Limbaugh used to say that libs listen to his show for their show prep. With more and more people using your now safe for polite society talking points, who do you think is a major broadcaster who uses your materials without giving you credit for being the groundbreaker? No polite answers. Name names.
Okay, well, B'Tselem is the leading human rights group in Israel. B'Tselem, it's called. And by the way, they use the term Jewish supremacism. They never give me credit for it. And one of the Jewish leaders in B'Tselem, he didn't say he invented it, but some people in that impression, and Norman Finkelstein, you know, thought that. And he said, yeah, this man invented this brilliant term. And in a way, I was very happy to hear Finkelstein say that, because he said the term is really brilliant and poignant, because it brings up the real problem here. The problem, he said, is not Zionism. It's Jewish supremacism. In fact, it's all about Jewish supremacism. It's about Judaism. Zionism wouldn't exist without Judaism and Jewishness. And I've always quoting to you from the Academy Awards ceremony, where the writer or the producer of the Zone of Interest, Academy Award winning play or movie. And he actually says in here, he took the award and then he got up in front of the whole people at the Academy Awards and he said, listen, he said, we stand here as men. And these are the Jews who accompanied him. He said, we stand here as men who repudiate their Jewishness. Now that's a Jew I can get behind.
So who are the big broadcasters who are using your material, who don't
give you credit? Katie Helper does that a lot. I think Max Blumenthal has used the term a lot. Even Judge Napolitano has used the term. I've heard him use it. McGregor has used it some. And another thing that I'm talking about, one of my new pushes that I'm pushing for right now, is I'm sick and tired of hearing about, quote, the Holocaust. Now, a lot of Jews, such as the Academy Award winner in his receiving the award, said, quote, they've hijacked the Holocaust and used it as a way to continue their mass murder, you know, the conflict, genocide in Gaza. But the truth is, it's ridiculous for them to point what was done to Jews in the so-called Holocaust. It seems like if you're going to talk about crimes by a certain people, right, and how they're using people that committed crimes against them as a way to justify their own Holocaust, why don't they talk about the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust that exist? You know, all you got to do is just read through the Old Testament. Man, woman, child, baby, such as in Samuel, you know, kill the men, the women, the children. And just to make sure that you don't forget them, make sure you kill the mothers and the suckling babies, right? And that's actually, it was supposedly they were killed because of 400 years before that time, the Amalekites had a fight with the Jews. So, I mean, it's like, now people like, don't get mad at me for saying these things. There's a lot of evil in the Old Testament, as you all know. A lot of people committing crimes against God. And I say that Jesus changed all that stuff, right? Because he came in and he said that God's grace and love is for all people in the world. And there are no more chosen people who are Jews. Your genealogy makes no difference. In fact, he said the greatest comeuppance to Jews, as you can imagine, he told all the Jews who are always trading on their ancestors, Abraham, Joseph, Jacob, you know, so forth, Isaac, David, Moses. They always trade on that, their genealogy. Jesus said, you know what? God could pick up stones and make as great a people as these things from stones. It doesn't mean a damn thing, because you had some ancestors that did something good, all right? Millions of people have done things good. And he said that it's not the genealogy that gets you into heaven. It's two things: loving God, that's a God of love, which is what I am and my Father. And secondly, love your neighbor as yourself. Be fair to neighbors. Judaism is all about cheating, lying, enslaving, murdering, genociding, ethnically cleansing non-Jews, and ultimately having the ultimate wet dream of Judaism, which is taking over the whole world. Greater Israel, as I said, is not about the Nile and the Euphrates. It's about taking over the whole planet Earth.
So the Greater Israel Project, that Nile to the Euphrates, that's really almost like a ploy to take the eye off that they're trying to grab the whole world. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, it's not taking the eye off. It's what they were dealing with all the time.
Like a red herring, right?
It is a red herring in a way, but let's put it this way. But it's pretty clear in the Old Testament, it's very clear in the Talmud, that their aim was total world domination. It says in Isaiah very clearly that all the leading kings and queens of the whole world will come to you, and you're going to have to leave your gates of your kingdom open, the Jewish gates of their kingdoms open, because the entire world is going to bring you tribute. They're going to bring you wealth and money. They're going to repair your walls. They're going to bring you money. And it goes on to the most abject sycophancy that you could possibly imagine, because it actually says in Isaiah that the Gentiles are going to come and they will crawl on their belly to you and they will lick the dirt off of the feet of their Jewish masters. Now, this is not something that I believe God embraces or Jesus embraces. Jesus said it from the very beginning of his ministry. No, I've come for all people. I don't believe in any people exploiting, harming, hurting other people, especially not children and innocent people. You have no right to be tyrants over the world. All people. Blessed are the peacemakers, what Jesus said.
Yeah, look at what they're doing to Lebanon. They just don't tire.
They've driven out already 1.25 million people. Yep. From their homes.
Yep.
Ethnic cleansing en masse.
Yep.
This is a massive crime being taken up, and the world doesn't give a crap. But why does the world not give a crap? It's because the gatekeeping of the world, just like they're talking about gatekeeping in the Old Testament, the gatekeeping is run by Jews. Yeah. You gotta realize that Google controls 85% of the search engines in the whole world. So when you search, and also they control Wikipedia. So, the most common thing people use is Google search or Wikipedia to find out about anything, a political theory, a historical fact or idea, a historical interesting issue, a political personality, a religious or social or philosophical position, right? So how in the hell do you have Wikipedia controlled by a Jew, and the founder is a Jew, and who literally says he's a complete radical Zionist. But he's
Jimmy Wales.
Yeah, but he says, I'm a complete dedicated Zionist Jew, but I'm going to be fair, don't worry. In Wikipedia, right? While it's acknowledged that even the Jewish IDF is actually editing Wikipedia pages in mass. And he won $1 million reward, by the way, in the biggest university in Israel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is really important that we understand these basic things. Google has got the control of the majority of the videos shown on planet Earth go through YouTube. That's it. It's the biggest source of videos in the whole world, right? And who runs YouTube? And they've got half the people on YouTube self-censoring, and that's one of the problems here. Because when I was telling you earlier about the Holocaust stuff, you know, what I say today is one of my terms I'm using a lot now. As I say, even people like Chris Hedges are Holocaust deniers, even though they say, yes, the Holocaust is being used improperly because it's to dehumanize the Palestinians, and that's an excuse to do what they're doing to the Palestinians. But he's a Holocaust denier because he should be using the Holocaust that Jews have done in the past to prove what they're doing against the Palestinians today. This is totally in line with their character.
All right, we got about a half hour left. Anybody that wants to call, you know where to get the call-in number. And here's the PIN number again, 9136. 39.54.97. Then you put the pound sign in there. I'll put it in again. One more time.
All right.
One more time. Or if you got any questions, if you don't, we're just going to cut this show short because we got things to do, people to see, places to go.
I
got
to go to do some work. So let's just cut it short. Let's do a couple more questions and we'll go.
If we got
you want to get a question, get one in now, folks.
All right. You got a few seconds here. Yeah, actually, in 4.5 minutes, it'll be the bottom of the hour. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
We had a good show today.
Yeah, it's always good, Dave.
You can play some good music in the meantime.
Sure. What do you want?
Over the show.
Tell me what you want. We'll close it out with a song.
We can play some of my favorite Jewish songs.
Yeah.
Let's play Mighty Fortress Is Our God to close the show. Let's just play it now.
All right.
Mighty Fortress by Steve Green.
Yeah, that's perfect timing, too. All right. Excellent.
Go for it.
All right. Here we go. This will close out the show.
A mighty fortress is our God.
A mighty fortress is our God. A bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amid the flood.
Can you hear that, folks?
Of mortal ills.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. It's playing. Yeah.
Mortal ills prevailing.
For still our ancient foe
does
seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great.
And armed
with cruel hate.
True words never spoken.
On earth is not his equal.
Not in terms of his firepower, that's for sure.
Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. Were not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be?
Christ Jesus,
it is he, Lord Sabaoth his name, from age to age the same. And he must win the battle. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo,
world with devils filled,
we will not fear, for God hath willed his truth to triumph through
us.
The prince of darkness
grim.
We tremble not for him.
We tremble not.
His rage we can endure.
For
lo, his doom is
doom is sure, according to Dave Gahari.
One little word shall fail him. That word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The Spirit and the gifts are ours, through him who with us sided. Let goods and kindred go. This mortal life also a body they may kill. God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. His kingdom is forever.
That guy can sing. What do you think, Dave? Dave, you there?
Yeah, he can sing.
That guy can really sing.
Yeah. Is he still alive?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Still our ancient foe, doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. And this world with devils filled. You know, it's just that song is about the Jews, and it's by the great Martin Luther, who understood that the greatest threat to mankind is Jews. And it's just like the New Testament, because if you read the New Testament, it says, quote, and the Jews crucified our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and killed the prophets and oppose all mankind, hate all mankind, and drove us out and keep us from teaching to the Gentiles that they might be saved. But God's wrath has come upon them at last. That's why they hate Jesus Christ so much and the message of the New Testament. But we've lost the meanings of all this because we've been controlled by this Jewish media over the last 100 years. The Scofield Bible, you know, that was financed by the Untermeyers, right? The whole Christian Zionist thing, it was financed and led by Jews. Kufi. That's Christians United for Israel. But guess who founded it? Was it? It wasn't a Christian.
No.
It was a guy named Brog, his actual real last name is the same name as Ehud Baruch, Barak, right? That was the Israeli prime minister that was schlepping the Gentile little girls and shiksas at the Epstein mansion. I mean, this is the guy literally that created Christians United for Israel. And then by bribing a few of the ministers and controlling their access to media, such as the cable news networks at the time, and the cable places where you could rent time on cable TV, by doing that, they were able, and they also, they took over Christian publishing, and they publicized and promoted a book called The Last Great Planet Earth, I think it's called. That was a book that really taught this rapture stuff.
The late great planet Earth.
That's yeah. Right. And I read that as a young kid. And the book was kind of impressive, but then I realized later that it was totally unscriptural, right? It's nothing to do with Jesus Christ told us very clearly. In fact, if you want to know who the Antichrist is, not even used as an individual, it's used to describe anyone that opposes Jesus Christ. And Jesus even poses the question, rhetorical actually, the question of who is the Antichrist? How do you know who the Antichrist is? You know how he answered the question? Well, the Antichrist is obvious. It's the person who says they are the Father, but not of the Son. Now, who is most like that definition? That's these Jews, right? And Jesus said the only way to the Father is through the Son. And the only way you can know what the Father really means and says is to...
Did you hear that?
Somebody's saying something.
Hank is here.
Hey, Hank, how are you doing?
Hello.
Yeah, we're closing down, but I'm glad you got in for a moment.
Yeah. I had to get out of the car and push. Why is my calling picture purple every time?
What picture?
The phone. See, it's the colors. Yeah, but what color would you like, Hank? What color would you like?
AI, for some reason, assigns a purple color to me. I don't know.
You don't like purple? That means that's royal. That's purple. The royal color.
That's the royal.
Your royalty.
That's the color of kings.
I should shut up then.
In Mardi Gras in Louisiana, it's an old Christian holiday. We use the most prominent colors are purple or gold, and the colors of my university, LSU, pretty famous university in America, the colors of my university are purple and gold, and the football team wears purple and gold.
That's why it's the minority color, I guess, right?
It's not a minority color.
It's the colors for Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it's a Mardi Gras color.
It's a great color.
No, see, the idea was this. Purple was a very different color from most of the colors, you know, in the ancient world. And it was hard to produce that perfect purple color. They had to have certain kinds of vegetables and so forth to try to create that color of the dye. And it was a very rare color. And one of the reasons why they used that color for kings and queens with the gold trimming was because it was so rare, as the idea of the elite, like the kings and queens of the society and what in European history. Anyway, that's a little tidbit.
Interesting. Beets these days are very cheap, so
what
you could color with a beet, like the purple beets.
Oh, yeah, you have some, yeah, you have purple potatoes, purple beets, and there's some purples around. But anyway, depends. You also have to make it in a stain that it really goes through and holds up, you know, once you properly stain everything. And there's certain processes they need to do that. Well, it's nice talking to you, my friend Henry. And yeah, I want you to have a good day. And I'm glad we got to say hello to you.
I also had a question, though.
All right, one question. Let's go, and then I'll get going.
One question.
Sure.
So a local politician here in Estonia talked about abolishing the pension system, because in Europe we have a national pension systems, and he said we shouldn't have it, so that people go back to the old ways of ensuring your old age by having kids and kids taking care of you, and by using that technique, boosting the birth rates. What do you think about that idea?
Well, it's one of the things I think the Germans understood that we need proper pensions, because that's all true. Can I answer the question, please? Let me try to answer the question in full, as I would do in an academic classroom. All right. If somebody's a student asked me the question, this is how I'd answer it. All right. So here's the situation. All right. There are some people who, for whatever reason, can't have children because of accidents or because of sicknesses they had in their family, the circumstances in their family. It's a good idea for them also to be taken care of in old age. Same thing is true about medicine. Because families can help take care of the sick, doesn't mean that you shouldn't have some sort of national health insurance to give people the opportunity to get good medical treatment, no matter what your income is in society. So I agree with the idea of pensions. But we also, it's the same kind of principle as in Iran. You know, they look at Iran and they criticize the people of Iran, like how, look, these Christians, some of these people who are Christians, that's not the kind of Christian that I am. But they look at the people of Iran and they say, oh, look at these people. We're so much better. We're not better. I'll give you an example. Let's look at the family life in Iran. In Iran, and let's start with America. In America, listen to this, probably less than 70% of families with children have both parents in the family still there, both mother and father, right? Only 70%. In Iran, almost 90% of families are still intact with two-parent families. In Iran, and we'll start with America. In America, about 10% of the victims of criminality practicing in this country are in integrated schools, and from some of the problems we have in this society, we have 10% of our kids at some point being hurt, injured, damaged, even higher than adults. In Iran, the people that are damaged on the streets, robbery, rape, assault, these kind of things, are like less than 0.05%, probably less than 0.5%. That's a pretty good example there. in Iran, you have basically no, almost no addiction. And what addiction you do have are the people that run the routes and so forth, to some of the international trades that go on. But the kids just don't have the addiction that we have, where you have every movie and every program telling kids how cool drugs are. I mean, in so many different ways, they don't really allow pornography where they can stop it in Iran. They don't, you know, they don't allow prostitution. They don't allow a lot of other things that are very common in the USA. We are truly a Sodom and Gomorrah, that's for sure. And they certainly oppose some of the homosexual aspects. And they're very hardcore against pedophilia. And they punish that. The average person in Iran will just as much, you know, kill a person caught in the act of pedophilia. And they won't be punished for it if it's proven that that person was guilty of this kind of a horrible crime. So there's a lot of differences between the two. But on most moral, ethical issues, it seems like the Iranians are doing a lot better than we are.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll see you all later. And thank you, Dave. Have a good night.
All right. Henry's happy?
He's a good man. I like
him. He got his answer.
Estonians are great people. I really enjoyed meeting the Estonians that I knew there. And they're very attractive, very healthy, just really down-to-earth, honest, decent people. They're the epitome of what we would call the European archetype.
And Henry's got balls.
He's got them. Okay, take care, folks.
All right, Dave. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Have a good night, everyone. Happy Easter to anyone Orthodox.
Happy Easter.
We'll see you next week.